So we're going to discuss the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, the mitzvah of Melchemes Amalek, and finally the mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek. Those are all on the agenda for today. Oh, Ben is here. Ben, I have a question for you that I wanted to ask you yesterday, but I'll ask you today if you're around for a minute after the dinner. I didn't see you yesterday.
Should I give you the answer before the question?
Yeah. Now, I don't know, again, what do you have in front of you, but yesterday we gave our page Resh Tes Vav. You might not have that, but right now I think you'll have to look home at somebody. I don't have another copy. So we start with the Mechilta at the end of Parshas B'Shalach, Amar Rab Lazar HaModoi. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a declaration, even a shvua, which he dramatically holds on to the Kisei HaKavod, and he declares, I'm not going to leave even a nin v'neched, even a grandson or great-grandson of Amalek alive. Oh, you have an extra copy here? Oh, great.
This looks like your original.
No, it's, well, whatever it is, I have this, so.
Thank you.
Oh, great. So now you're on board. Now, in the same Mechilta, he says that we have to destroy not only the Nin and Neched of Amalek, but also we're going to destroy the animals of Amalek. Fine. What we want to understand today is, what does the Mechilta mean by Nin v'Neched? Obviously, the descendants of Amalek are Amalek. I mean, we don't have the original Amalek, you know, the grandson of Esav. He's not alive, so we have to kill his descendants. That's the mitzvah of Melchemes Amalek. So why do you have to tell me that even if he's a nin or a neched? Well, what did you add that I wouldn't know beyond that? Also, he says, in the case of the gemalim of Amalek, the Mechilta seems to give the following explanation: Shelo yomru gamal zeh shel Amalek. In other words, we have to get rid of these animals of Amalek because somebody might point to them and say that this belongs to Amalek. Right? So what's that got to do with Nin v'Neched? You know, in the same breath, Rabbi Lozer HaModoi mentions Nin v'Neched, the descendants of Amalek, together with the Behemoths of Amalek. But in the case of the Behemoths of Amalek, it sounds like this is not the real mitzvah of Melchemes Amalek. This is only that nobody should point to this animal and say, well, this animal belonged to an Amalek. We want to blot out the entire memory of Amalek. But in the case of Nin v'Neched, which is brought down here in the Mechilta the same breath as Gamal and Rachel, here the Mechayev is simply Mechias Amalek. I mean, we're talking about Nin v'Neched. That's an Amalek. So at this point, we want to study a sugya of Ravin in the name of Rabbi Yochanan in Masechet Kiddushin on Daf Samach Zayin. This sugya can be entitled the sugya of Yuchsin. And the question is, when a child is born, to whom is he miyuchas? Does the Yuchsin go after the father or after the mother? And this is relevant not only in Jewish law vis-a-vis Jews, but also in Jewish law vis-a-vis Goyim. So for example, we have certain dinim that apply to certain nations amongst the Goyim, you know, like Mitzrim, Edomim, Moavi, and we have laws that apply to Amalekim, and so forth and so on. So what happens when you have a mixture of blood coming from two different nations? For example, the father of this child comes from one nation, the mother from another nation. So the father is, let's say, an Adomi, and the mother is a French woman. You know, so is the child called an Adomi, or Moavi, or Mitzri, whatever the case may be? So Rabbi Yochanan formulates the super principle here, the overriding principle that applies in Yuchsin with regard to the Umos HaOlam, and that is called Halach Acher HaZachar, that the child's Yuchsin depends upon his father. And the Gemara in Kiddushin quotes a Braisa to derive this halacha from a pasuk, and it's very fascinating that the pasuk itself is addressing the case of Knanim. Now, in the case of Knanim, you know, we mentioned a whole bunch of nations today, but the most, how shall I say, profound and far-reaching conclusion in Halacha would be when you deal with the question of who's a Knani, because the Torah says, and this is a mitzvah in Taryag, lo sechaya kol neshama, that we have to completely destroy the Knanim. We come into the land, and the Torah says, hachrem tachrem, get rid of all these seven nations, one of which is called Knani, but there are many, six others, and we have to wipe them out. So now the question is, well, how do I determine whether this particular individual is a Knani? Does it depend upon his father? Does it depend upon his mother? And the answer is Rabbi Yochanan's principle that the umas olam kol holich achar azochar, and we're going to derive this from a pasuk. That means if the father of this child is a Knani, the mother comes from a different uma, the child is to be considered a Knani, and the mitzvah of lo sechai kol neshama is going to kick in. If on the other hand, the mother is a Knanis, and the father comes from a different uma, then since we apply the principle of kol holich achar azochar, the child is not a Knani. And that's the brisa of minayin li echem min ha'umo shebol ha'knanis. And now we're talking about the male, we'll call it the father, is from another nation. The mother, on the other hand, is from Knan. She's a Knanis. And how do we know that the Vlad, right, holy ben, atak rashoi lekroso evet. Now what this means is that you don't have to kill the child, because the child is not considered a Knani. His mother's a Knanis, but his father's from a different Uma. And therefore I can take him as an Eved. If he was a full-fledged Knani, if his Yichus was to his father who was a Knani, then I have to put him to death. And the Brisa derives this from a pasuk, V'gam mibnei atoshavim hagarim imchem mehem tiknu. So it seems like that we enter into the land of Israel and there are a bunch of Toshavim that are living amongst us, and we're allowed to buy them and acquire ownership on them as Avadim. How could that be when the Torah says, Lo techai kol neshama? The answer is that the Yichus is coming from a father who's not a member of the seven nations. Yochol af knani shebal achas min ha'umos. Maybe I would take this a step further and say, well, if it's not pure Knani blood, if one of the two parents is not a Knani, comes from an Umos, then the child is not a real Knani. And in this case, even though the father's a Knani, but the mother is not a Knanis, is Vaholi Ben, you might think, Shata Rashoi, by Yochel, Yochel means you might think that Ata Rashoi Liknoso Bi'evet. Why? Because his mother is not a Knanis, only his father's a Knani. Talmud Lomash Aholidu Biartzachem in an Oladim Biartzachem Alon Magar Biartzachem. So Rashi explains that this miut is coming to establish that this, the yichus of the child depends upon the father. If the father is a Knani, the child is a Knani. If the father is Mina Umos and the mother is a Knanis, the child is Mina Umos. He's not a Knani. So Rashi explains, Minayin Le'echad Mina Umos Sheba Olam. She'enon min ha'umo shel Eretz Yisrael. He's not one of the seven nations that occupy the land. She'nemar ha'kosim aleim lo sechai kol neshom. With regard to these nations, the Torah commands us to destroy them. And how do we know if one of these members who is not included in lo sechai kol neshom, he's a member of a different uma, ubal ha'knanis, shehi b'chlal lo sechai. So the mother would have to be put to death. She's a full-fledged knanis. But what about the child of this marriage, whose father is from the Umos? And when we say Knanis, Rashi points out, Ruadin Chivis, V'Yavusis, any of the seven nations, Shata Rashai L'Knosa V'Eved, why? Because the mother is a Knanis, but the father is not a Knani? The Shadina Le'Basa Zohar, that the Yuchsin and the status of the child is determined solely by the father, Umutul Yosef, and therefore the child is allowed to be left alive, and you can therefore acquire him as an Eved. Tamalom v'gami bnei atoshavim shemolidin min haknanim mehem tiknu hareisha ba'umos yeshna alocha shavlad holech achar hazoch. Now this is going to be fascinating when we apply this to Amalek. Because what happens if you have an admixture, I call it a mixed marriage, an intermarriage, between an Amaleki and a woman who does not belong to Amalek, or the reverse? What happens if she's the Amaleki problem and he's Mina Umos, and now they marry and they have a child? Is the child included in the mitzvah of Milchemes Amalek? So he says that the entire sugya in Kiddushin and all the drashos and the derivations with Rashi there are addressing the case of Zayin Umos. But we can apply the same question of Yuchsin to the Amaleki issue. And he says the following, V'tzarech Iyun, this is on line 5 on the second column, the left column, he says, V'mitzas Mechias Amalek, do we say Hakol Toli B'Zachar, if the father is an Amaleki, then we have a mitzvah to kill the child. But if the mother is the Amaleki and the father is coming from Mina Umos, then the child is not an Amaleki. Or should we say no, that Binogela Mitzvah Mechias Amalek, Afilu B'Kaigavna, even in that case, we're going to apply the same rules that apply to the Mitzvah of Zion Amamin. And therefore, this is the second side. So again, the first side, it doesn't matter what the order is, but the first side was not called Toli B'Zachar, meaning we're applying the universal principle that we saw in the Gemara in Kiddushin to Amalekim. And therefore, if the father is an Amaleki, Hakol Olech Achar Zachar, the child should be put to death. But if the father is Mina Umos and the mother is the Amaleki, then we do not put him to death. Dilma, he has another possibility that Binogel Mitzvah Mechias Amalek Afilu B'Kai Gavna Di Aviv Lo Havi Me Amalek V'Rak Imo Me Amalek Havi V'Chlal Mitzvah Shel Mechias Amalek. That maybe Mechias Amalek doesn't depend upon the exact status, the legal status of the child, whether he's called an Amaleki. All that we need to know is that his mother was an Amaleki. So, as far as the universal dinim of Los Achai, called Neshama, etc., he would not be considered Amaleki. But as far as the unique halacha of destroying Amalek, he's considered like an Amaleki. He's a quasi Amaleki for this mitzvah of Mechias Amalek because his mother is an Amaleki. And now he wants to swing back to the Mechilta that we started with. The Mechilta says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes a shvuah that I won't even allow a nin or a nechid of Amalek to exist. So the question was obvious. A nin v'nechid is an Amaleki. Why did you have to go out of your way to say that we're going to kill the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren? They're all Amalekim. What's going to be the answer? What would be a case where the nin v'nechid is not an Amaleki technically? His mother is an Amaleki, but the father is not. The father's been Ahumos. So technically, according to the universal laws, the child from this marriage is not an Amaleki.
The child also. Why do you have to go to Nin Benechet? Even Ben, Oba.
Right, so the way that the Mechilta conveys this message, dramatizes the idea that we're talking generations down the line, because what happens is with each succeeding generation, more of the, this, like Sancheirav comes with it. Right, it becomes polluted. In the first couple of generations, maybe the Amalekim intermarry amongst themselves. What do you call that? Inbreed. But after a certain amount of time, we have admixtures of other nations. So that's the concept of Nin V'Nechad, that even generations down the line still are included in Amalek. What do you mean they're included in Amalek? Why don't we talk and address the case where the father is not an Amaleki? So it's true the mother is an Amaleki, but the father is not an Amaleki. So he suggests the following, that that's the gewaldige chiddush here of the Mechilta. Afilu nin v'neched, even if the father is not an Amaleki, and therefore technically the child of this marriage, even though his mother is an Amaleki, is not an Amaleki, and therefore you would not include him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, no, he's also included in this mitzvah. Why? To the same extent that you include the animals of Amaleki, right? Because the Torah says that we want to be ma'abed zecher Amalek. We want to completely blot out even the memory of Amalek. So you look at this animal and you point to it and you say, oh, that's an Amaleki animal, right? Here too, this is a son of a mother Amalekis. And even though his father is not an Amaleki because he comes from the Yumas HaOlam, we're still going to apply the principle of Mechias Amalek. And this is all fine and dandy until we get to the Rambam. Now, Rabosa, I just want to point out something on the side here. For those who've been with me for the last day or two, we've been quoting Rambams coming out of our ears. We've been quoting Rambams in Sefer HaMitzvahs. We quoted Rambams in Pirush HaMishnayos. We quoted Rambams in Mishnah Torah. Now, we're going to quote another source of the Rambam. That's the Moreh Nevuchim. And in the Moreh Nevuchim of the Rambam, he writes that if the father is not an Amaleki and the mother is an Amalekis, there's no chiyuv to destroy the children of that marriage. So we have a Ben Amalekis whose father is a Frenchman, and the Rambam is outspoken about this. We have no mitzvah of Mechias Amalek with regard to this child because his father is not an Amaleki. So everything that we said in the Mechilta is very sharp, and it really explains two things. Number one, why the Mechilta had to tell me that we destroy the Ninve Neched of an Amaleki, and number two, why did it combine that together with the animals of the Amaleki? We've really done a beautiful job to answer that question based on this suffix. What happens as far as Amalek is concerned? The Gemara is talking about Akol Holy Chachalav Zachar vis-a-vis the Knanin. Do we apply the same principles to Amalek? And that's the chiddush of the Mechilta, that in Amalek we have a new definition that expands Mechias Amalek to the Ninve Neched, who's a Ben Amalekis, but his father is not an Amaleki. And that's why the Mechilta combines it into, you know, and integrates that together with the Behemos. But the only problem is the Rambam can't accept that. And again, Rabbi said, don't get too excited about that. Meaning, you shouldn't get angry or upset. You know, this is not catastrophic. It means that the Mechilta has a sheet, and the Rambam didn't accept the Mechilta. And the Rambam had other sources, and he came to the conclusion that the Mechias Amalek, that mitzvah applies strictly and exclusively to Amalekim, who are considered Amalekim according to the laws of Yuchsin. And if the mother is an Amalekis and the father is not, the child is not Miyuchas Tamalek. And there's no mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. That was the Rambam's opinion. It could very well be, if Alpshat and the Mechilta is correct, that the Mechilta would disagree with the Rambam. And the Mechilta has a much broader scope definition of the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. And my friends, you can begin to appreciate the immense, enormous repercussions of this machlokas. You know, Mitzvah Shem, after we appoint a melech, and we have a mitzvah Amalek, you know, we all the enemies that surround us have been destroyed, now we're ready for the mitzvah Amalek. Well, if you accept our pshat in the Mechilta, then we're the scope of this mitzvah Mechias Amalek is gigantic. Whereas if you accept the Rambam, you know, it's a much more limited mitzvah. Now that's as far as the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim is concerned. You know, in a halachic discussion, when you quote the Moreh Nevuchim, it's a little bit off base. You know, it's a bit of a curveball, as we say. You know, it's a different color, if you will. But let's get back on board to the more classical works of the Rambam, and the most classical halachic work of the Rambam is for sure the Mishnah Torah. And let's take a look at the Rambam in Mishnah Torah. The Rambam has placed these two mitzvahs that we've discussed, contiguous one to the other, the fifth parak of Hilchos Melachim. He talks about, number one, the mitzvah of destroying the seven nations, Lo Sechai Kol Neshama, and then immediately he picks up the discussion of the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. And this is in Halacha Dalet and Halacha Hey. Halacha Dalet is dedicated to the mitzvah Saseh of Hachrem Tachrem Lo Sechai Kol Neshama. And the Rambam says, Mitzvah say lahachrim shivas ha'amamim. And he says, Kol abal yado. Now, some of you gentlemen might enjoy what I call highlighting, or might appreciate highlighting. I happen to have a couple of extra highlights. I can't promise you that they work, because they've been here for like months, not years. But if anybody wants to highlight, and this will really, really help us if you highlight certain words in the text. Yeah, this is not worth anything. So let's not all jump for the three highlights here, because, you know, we can get to the point at which we fight and there'll be a major battle here. Okay. So much for that idea. Okay. So, what can I do? I'll just say it's a fast day. Maybe that's why you don't have the energy to highlight. But if you would have had the energy to highlight, then I would have recommended that you highlight the third line in the paragraph at the bottom left, and that's called Kol Shebo Liyado Echad Mehem Velo Hargo Over Belotas. So the Rambam says the following, that the mitzvah of destroying the seven Amamim applies to Kol Shebo Liyado. A Kanani comes in front of you. You got to kill him. And that's the mitzvah of Lo Sechai Kol Neshama. In other words, there's a Gevaldige Chiddush here in the Rambam. The Rambam is saying that the mitzvah of destroying of the seven nations is not limited to a framework of what? Milchama. But it applies even outside the context of Milchama. An individual Kanani is here. You're with him. You have to kill him. And that's the mitzvah of Lo Sechai Kol Neshama. It doesn't mean you have to put your life into danger, but you'd have to kill him. Then when he gets to Halacha, hey, the very next Halacha, the mitzvah of Amalek, he doesn't mention a word about Kol HaBol Yado. That an Amaleki shows up in front of your door and you have to kill him. The Rambam completely omits that. Now that was a major breakthrough, which the Rambam was machadish here in Halacha Dalet with regard to Shiva Amamim. We were anticipating that the Rambam would repeat that in Halacha Hey with regard to Amalek. Now sometimes we can learn and derive conclusions from what the Rambam does say, and sometimes we could derive conclusions from what the Rambam doesn't say. And this is an example of a conclusion that we want to derive from the omission of the Rambam. And the Rambam doesn't tell you that you have to kill an Amaleki when he appears in front of you. Because there's no obligation to kill an Amaleki except within the framework of what? Milchama. And that's what he points out on the top of the next page, which you'll see on Reish Tes Zayin, that according to the Rambam, there's a fundamental difference between these two mitzvahs, the mitzvah on the one end of Zayin Amim, the mitzvah on the other end of Amalek, that whereas, with regard to the mitzvah of Zayin Amim, there's a chiyuv on each person to kill every member of the Zayin Amim, with regard to mitzvahs Amalek, the mitzvah is incumbent on the entire tzibur within the framework of milchama, and there's no mitzvah incumbent on the yachid. And not only that, he says, since again we're quoting different sources in the Rambam, there's another book of the Rambam which is called the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, and in Mitzvah Reish Mem Ches, the Rambam writes that the mitzvah is lahachris zaro shel amolik b'toras chovas tzibur v'lo chal al kol ish v'ish v'yisrael. So we now have two Rambams that we want to put together here. What I mean is the following. With regard to Nin V'Neched, okay, now, Rabosa, I'm not going to repeat myself over and over again, so let's get it down once, and it'll be a code word for the rest of this year. Nin V'Neched means someone whose mother is an Amalekis and his father is from Umas Ha'ol. That's what I'm using as our shortened, abbreviated terminology here. The Rambam Shita is that there's no mitzvah to destroy Nin V'Neched. Number two, the Rambam in both Mishneh Torah and in the Sefer Mitzvahs is committed to the view that there's no mitzvah of Mechias Amalek that's incumbent on the Yachid. There's only a mitzvah of Milchemes Amalek. So again, let's repeat. The Rambam does not accept the Mechilta. He does not recognize a mitzvah of killing Nin V'Neched of Amalek. Number two, the Rambam, as we'll soon see, does not accept the Sefer Chinuch. We haven't gotten to the Sefer Chinuch. That's in the next paragraph. That there's a Chiyuv not only B'Toras Milchama against Amalek, but even on the Yochid. The Rambam doesn't recognize that Chiyuv on the Yochid. And again, we don't learn that from what the Rambam says in Mishneh Torah, but from the Rambam omits. But in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, on the other, the Rambam is outspoken about the fact that there's no chiyuv of Mechias HaMolek on the Yachid. It's only incumbent upon the Tzibur as a mitzvah of what? Of Milcham. Now we get to the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Tofresh Dalid is of the opinion that there's two mitzvahs in Mechias HaMolek. It's a double-headed mitzvah. First of all, he says, Nitzavenu limcho zara shalomot la'avid zichrumen olam zosi mitzvah mutelis ala tzibur kulam. It's a mitzvah milchama. And that's a mitzvah on the tzibur. And he invokes a Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Chaf. The Gemara says that when we enter into the land of Israel, we as a tzibur of Klal Yisrael are obligated in three mitzvahs. We have to set up a melech, we have to go out to battle against a Molech, and we have to build the Beis HaMikdash. Then the Sefer HaChinuch drops a bomb. Ube Emes, he says, Ki gam al kol yachid mi Yisrael haschorim mutal achiv lahargam uli abdam min haolam im yesh koach biyadam bechol makom ubechol zman. Here the Sefer HaChinuch adds another dimension to the mitzvah Mechias HaMolek that's incumbent al kol yachid mi Yisrael. He qualifies it's only on the Zchorim, which we'll have to take up as a separate topic, and it's mutal achiv la'argam la'abdam in ol. So whereas the Rambam Shita in both the Mishnah Torah and in the Sefer HaMitzvahs is that the mitzvah of HaMolek is incumbent exclusively on whom? On the Tzibur. The Sefer HaChinuch has a double mitzvah, and the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolek is not only incumbent upon the Tzibur, but it's also incumbent on the Yachid. Now, where is the source for such a radical conclusion? I mean, in the case of Zayin Amim, and even the Rambam is on board that there's a chiyuv on the Yachid, because it says in the Torah, Lo Sechai Kol Neshama. And as you're looking at a Knani, and you have to destroy that Knani. But in the case of Amolek, the pasuk says Milchama Hashem Amolek. Milchama, yes, but not to obligate the individual to kill any single Amoleki who comes by. And the answer is Rabosai, that we have in the Torah two parshios of Milchamas Amolek. We have one at the end of Bishalach and one at the end of Ki Teitze, and there's a sharp difference between the two. Whereas in the parsha of Bishalach, the Torah speaks about Milchama. In fact, the entire context in Bishalach was Milchama, because it says, Vayomer Amalek, Vayilochim Yisrael, Vayomer Moshe El Yoshua, Vachalon Anoshim, it say, Vilochim Amalek. And Yeshua gathers the troops, and he goes out to battle against Amalek, Moshe Aaron here, Chur here, and Moshe there, the whole story. And then the Torah says that this Milchama against Amalek, which was initiated in the battle of Yeshua at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, that's only Shlav Aleph. Then there's going to be an ongoing Milchama against Amalek, Bechol Dor V'Dor, in every generation. So here, in Parshas Bishalach, the whole context of Amalek is Milchama. But then, when you fast forward to Parshas Ki Teitze, there's nothing about Milchama. All it says is Timchez Zecher Amalek. That's all we have over here. Oh, we also have Zohar as Amalek. Okay, fine. We'll get back to that later. But besides the mitzvah of Zohar, it says Timchez Zecher Amalek. Doesn't say Milchama. So apparently, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, let's derive a radical conclusion here. And in that sense, we're going to make a parallel, a mirror image between the mitzvah of Milchama, the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek and the mitzvah of Hachrim Tachrim to destroy the Zayin Amim. That if the Torah would have only couched this mitzvah of Amalek in terms of a Milchama as it did in Parshas Bishalach, then Enoch Inami, the Rambam would be right. And the mitzvah of Amalek is only a mitzvah of what? Of Milchama. It's incumbent upon the tzibur. But since the Torah now adds a new parsha called Timchez Zecher Amalek in Parshas Ki Teitze, it's adding a whole new dimension to the mitzvah Amalek. We're not talking about a milchama. We're talking about a chovas yachid of Timchez Zecher Amalek. Every single Amaleki is like a zecher. He continues to present an Amaleki entity, and we have to destroy that. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, the upshot of this whole discussion when we take the two parashiyas together is that there's a double mitzvah of Mechias HaMolek. One is a mitzvah on the tzibur as a mulchama, and the other is a mitzvah on the yachid. Anytime he's bol yodcha, then you have to kill him. And that is the chiddush of the Sefer HaChinuch. So again, Rabbi Osei, it comes out that If you take Zayin Amin and Aboli together as one, you have four different chiyuvim, so to speak. You have a mitzvah will come against the Zayin Amin, a mitzvah will come against Aboli. You have a mitzvah of the Yochin in the case of Zayin Amin and in the case of Aboli. That's the shita of the Sefer HaChinuch. Two parshios in the Torah, one parsha in Beshalach, and that's a mitzvah chama. One parsha in Kitetze, and that's called Yochin v'Yochin me'amolek sheba liyot. Now, let's get back to the Mechilta for a moment. The Mechilta, now we're on the top left column here, is of the opinion that we have to destroy not only the Amalekis, but even their animals, correct? However, according to the Minchas Chinuch, right, the super commentary on the Chinuch in Tofresh Dalet, the Rambam does not accept this Mechilta. And the Rambam nowhere codifies an obligation within the context of Amalek to destroy their animals. Because the Rambam never accepted this Mechilta. Oh. Now this could be absolutely stunning. Why? Because if you remember, the Mechilta combined the animals together with whom? In the midst of Mechias Amalek, don't only answer once, Ninvenechen, correct? And we say that Ninvenechen is not really technically Amalekim. So if they're not really technically Amalekim, then this Mechilta is breaking new ground with a new concept that anything that reminds you of Amalek and is associated with Amalek has to be uprooted, has to be destroyed. The Rambam never accepted the Mechilta. But let's take the Mechilta and let's see what we can do with it. Let's take the Mechilta and run with it. If you take the Mechilta, then the Mechilta has really two mitzvahs in Amalek. There's one mitzvah molchama, and there's another mitzvah to destroy the memory of Amalek. And within the broader context of destroying the memory of Amalek, which seems to be the exact subject matter of Parshas Ki Teitze, when it says Timcha Zecher Amalek, says the Mechilta that applies to anything that Zecher Amalek. Timcha Zecher Amalek. What's Zecher Amalek? Even in the Nechet, who are technically not Amalekim as far as the laws of Yuchzah, because of Kol Olech Achar Zohar. And Behemos, because the Behemos remind you of Amalek. The Rambam, on the other hand, is, according to Sefer HaChinuch, never expanded the mitzvah of Amalek to include the Behemos, because the Rambam nowhere in the Mishnah Torah mentions a word about killing the Behemos. And if we take the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says that with regard to Ninve Neched, meaning if only his mother is an Amalekis, there's no mitzvah of destroying it. Both of these principles of restricting Amalek, according to the Rambam, both indicate that he rejected the Mechilta, because the Mechilta has two principles. Number one, that we kill the Ninve Neched of Amalek, and number two, that we kill the Behemoth of Amalek. The Minchas Chinuch says the Rambam never accepted the mitzvah of killing the Behemoth of Amalek. The Rambam himself in Mor Nevuchim says explicitly that there's no mitzvah to kill a Ninve Neched, meaning if Imo Amalekis vi aviv mi umo sa'olam. So now everything fits perfectly. Why? Because the Mechilta has two mitzvahs in Amalek. Number one, the mitzvah Melchama. Number two, the mitzvah of Zecher, of blotting out Mechias Zecher Amalek. The Nafkamina is going to be the following. In the case of the mitzvah Melchama, that's only incumbent upon the Tzibur. In the case of the mitzvah Melchama, that only applies to the Amalekim themselves, but not to someone who's not Miyuchas to Amalek, and certainly not to the Behemoth of the Amalek. Now the Mechilta says there's another mitzvah of Amalek. Not just the mitzvah Melchama, but also the mitzvah of Mechias Zecher Amalek in Parshas Ki Teitze. That second mitzvah engenders a chiv on the Yochid. Any Yochid who sees an Amalek has to kill him. Number two, it engenders a chiv of Mechias Amalek even on Ninve Neched, even though the mother was an Amalekis. Number three, only the mother was an Amalekis. Number three, it engenders a chiv to kill the Behemoths of Amalek because they shouldn't run around remembering Amalek. The Rambam says that the mitzvah Mechias Amalek is nothing more than a reformulation of the mitzvah Melchemes Amalek. And both parshios, according to the Rambam, should be integrated into one whole. So the mail of the Rambam holds there never was a mitzvah incumbent on the Yochid, as the Minchas Chinuch is medayik in the Rambam. Number two, the Rambam never holds that there's a chiyuv on Ninve Neched. Number three, the Rambam never accepted that there's a mitzvah to kill the Behemos. This is all based on the fact that Rambam sees both parshiyos as one entity, and the mitzvah is what? milchama. If it's milchama, then it's on the tzibur. It's against the Amalekim who are miyuchas to Amalek based on their father, and it does not include the behemoths.
How did Shaul get in trouble by leaving behemoths alive?
Oh, because Shaul was what's called a horosh shah. This is fascinating. Mitch, were you here when we discussed Kishuv? No. There's a Rashi in the parasha of Shmuel and Shaul who introduces another element here. For those who've heard this already, I beg your forgiveness, but I love reviewing this wild Rashi. Rashi, Mitch, says that when Shmuel commanded Shaul Amel to destroy the animals, it was because of Kishuv. Rashi says that the Amalekim were expert sorcerers. And what they did was, they appeared in the guise of animals when they were really human beings. They were Amalekim. And all of the Mefarshim jump on this Rashi. Why is Rashi introducing the strangest phenomenon here to interpret the parasha? Why not just assume that this is the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek? Now, again, this is a longer discussion, but we'll give it to you the tip of the iceberg. The Smag says that there's no mitzvah of Mechias Amalek until when? Until Mashiach. Yimos HaMashiach. So it could very well be that the mitzvah that Shmuel obligated Shaul in was not the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. The Rambam, in fact, in his introduction to Pirush HaMishnayos, gives two examples of what's called a Horosh Shah. And the second example is Mechias Amalek at the time of Shmuel and Shaul. The Rambam also seems to assume that the command to Shmuel was not, I'm sorry, to Shaul from Shmuel was not the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. Because otherwise that's not called a Rosh Hashanah, that's simply applying the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. And therefore, the theory that we developed yesterday was that if the command from Shmuel to Shaul was not the mitzvah of Amalek, it was a separate Horosh Shah, as the Rambam classifies it, then it goes by its own rules and regulations. And therefore Rashi was perplexed. If it goes by its own rules and regulations, then why was Shaul commanded to destroy the behemoths? You know, with regard to Mechias Amalek, we said that, at least according to the Mechilta, and we'll soon see the Sefer Achino, there's this more all-inclusive mitzvah to kill the behemoths that shouldn't... But here, this was a separate Horosh Shah. So Rashi came up with a whole fantastical theory as to why Shaul was commanded to kill the behemoths. It wasn't in the mitzvah of Milchamis Amalek, because the mitzvah of Milchamis Amalek would not have applied either at that time, because it was before Yimos HaShiach, or as the Rambam Shita, there's no mitzvah to destroy the animals of Amalek. So Rashi had to come up with a whole new explanation to justify why Shaul was commanded to destroy the behemoths. And the answer is because of Amalek, the Kishuv, that these were Amalekim. And the mitzvah that was given to Shaul, which was Horosh Shah, was to destroy the Amalekim. The animals are also Amalekim. As I say, Rashi, again, you know, if you want to fight against Rashi, b'vakasha, you know, you're. I'm always afraid that if you were put in a ring, you know, a boxing ring against Rashi, you might lose. You know, Rashi is a real heavy hitter, if you know what I'm saying. But at least I'm not in the ring, so you can't blame me for it. As I state in Rashi. So let's just, Rabosa, review what we have until this point. We have, if you will, a machlokas between the Rambam and the Mechilta. Again, that's a strange way of formulating it, but the Mechilta took a leap of faith here that has two tremendous nafkaminas. One nafkamina is to kill the animals of Amalek, and the other is nafkamina to kill the nin v'nechid of Amalek. And both stam from the same source. And that is that there's a mitzvah of obliterating the zecher Amalek. The Rambam, on the other hand, restricts and limits the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek to milchama, as the Pasuk says in Parshas Bishalach. And anything that it says in Kitetzi is just philosophical ideas of Hashkafa as to why we have to go out and battle against Amalek, because we want to blot out their memory. But it's only a mitzvah of milchama, says the Rambam. We're not going to reinterpret and break new grounds in terms of the nature and the scope of the mitzvah based on Timcha Zecher Amalek. Timcha Zecher Amalek is the mitzvah of Milchama, as formulated by the Torah Parashas Bishalach. Therefore, the Rambam concludes the following. Number one, there's no mitzvah to destroy the nin v'neched, because they're not Amalekim, because their father was from Umos HaOlam. Number two, the Rambam, according to the way that Minchas Chinuch understood, the Rambam denies that there's a mitzvah of killing the behemos, because the mitzvah of killing the behemos is this expanded mechilta of Timcha Zechra Amalek as a separate entity. And now we can question, what about the Yochid? Let me explain. We said that according to the Sefer HaChinuch, there are two mitzvahs in Mechias Amalek. And the Chinuch is outspoken about this. He says it explicitly, that number one, there's a mitzvah to go out and battle against Amalek, which he describes as mutalos al tzibur, and then he goes on and he says v'lo od, but in addition, there's a mitzvah on kol yachid v'yachid, and it's interesting. His language is la'abda min ha'olam. So an Amaleki comes in front of you, if you have the wherewithal to do it, kill him on the spot. Why? La'abda min ha'olam. Rabbo said, what does that sound like? When you hear the word la'abda min ha'olam, what does that sound like to you by sheer association? Mechias Zechra Molek. He, the Sefer HaChinuch, without mentioning it, is alluding to the parsha in Ki Teitze as a separate category and a separate mitzvah, so to speak. I don't mean a separate mitzvah in counting Taryag. What I mean is a new branch of the mitzvah, a new wing of the mitzvah. And that new wing of the mitzvah is la'aved Zechra Molek. And if there's a mitzvah la'avid zeichar molek, and you have the wherewithal to help and contribute, right? So you see an Amaleki, kill the Amaleki. It's called Amaleki Shebol Yotcha, and you have the wherewithal to kill him, kill him. That is your contribution to the mitzvah of la'avid zeichar molek. And now, Rabos, we understand very well why the Rambam omits this mitzvah. The Rambam doesn't have a mitzvah to kill any Amaleki that comes your way, because that's a Chovas Yochid and it applies outside the framework of Milchama. Excellent. And if it's outside the framework of Milchama, then there is no additional mitzvah according to the Rambam. The Sefer HaChinuch belongs to the camp of the Mechilta, namely that in addition to what we find in Parshas Peshalach as a mitzvah Milchama, there's an additional mitzvah that's formulated by the Torah in Parshas Ki Teitze of Timcha Zechra Molek, whereas the Mechilta's nafkamina was that we have to destroy a nin v'neched, we have to destroy a behemah v'molek. The Sefer HaChinuch is going to derive a whole other bombastic conclusion, far-reaching conclusion, from the parsha in Ki Teitze of Timcha Zechra Molek. La'abdu min ha'olam, even outside the framework of Milchama, even if you're alone in a closed room, it's just you and Mr. Amaleki. Get your sword and knock his block. And that's the Sefer HaChinuch. Why? It's not Milchama. It's not a Chovas Tzibur, it's a Chovas Yochid. Sefer HaChinuch derives that from the mitzvah of Timcha Zechra. The Rambam denies it. The Rambam doesn't have a mitzvah unto itself as Timcha Yitzamak. Maybe Timcha Yitzamak is a hashkafa where the Torah is telling you what's the ultimate goal of this Milchama that's going to take place against Amalek, Midar Dar, until finally at the time of Mashiach we'll win the ultimate battle and destroy Amalek. That's called Timcha as Zechra Amalek. And therefore, if you take a look at the paragraph that starts V'nira, you'll see that in the case of Nin V'neched, according to the Rambam, this is not part of the mitzvah, because the Milchama Eina, on line 5, Eina Rak Al Zera Amalek, which means that he has the status of Amaleki based on the laws of Yuchsin, because his father is an Amaleki, but if it's only his mother is an Amaleki, he, the child, is not to be put to death under the law of Milchama. And therefore the Rambam omits this whole Mechilta business about Nin V'neched. So it means that since the Rambam only has one mitzvah of Amalek, namely Milchama, that mitzvah would not include Nin V'neched insofar as he doesn't have Miyuchas Zera Amalek. However, if you go back to the Mechilta, The Mechilta has another mitzvah, and that's called Mechias Zecher Amalek, which he derives from Parshas Ki Teitze, and that applies even to someone who's not technically called Miyuchas. He's not Zera Amalek in the legal sense of the term, but rather there's some relationship to Amalek. He's no different than the animals of Amalek, which the Mechilta says we have to destroy under the mitzvah of Mechias Zecher Amalek. But the Rambam, who completely omits this case, in fact, we saw in the Mora that the Rambam denies that there's a mitzvah to kill the Nin V'Neched, that's the Rambam L'shitasa, the Rambam who is consistent with his view that there is no mitzvah of Amalek beyond the Milchamav against Amalek. As Memela, that's what the Rambam in the Mora Nevuchim says, that we're not going to destroy, we're not obligated to destroy anyone unless he's miyuchas li'amolek. And as we saw in the Michas Chinuch, he's medayik from the omission of the Rambam, there's no mitzvah to destroy the animals of the Amalek. That's all according to the Shitas HaRambam. But if we go back to the Mechilta, which you'll see on the top of page Reish Yud Zion on the second line, Rabbi Elazar Modoi, he holds that in addition to the mitzvah of Milchemes Amalek, like we saw in the Chinuch, there's another mitzvah, and that's called Mechias Amalek, that applies to the Yachid, and that includes anything that would remind us of Amalek, any auxiliary association with Amalek, including Nin V'Neched, and including Behemoth. So Rabbi Osef, if we want to summarize, we can line up the Shitas in the following way. We have the Mechilta with the Sefer Chinuch on one hand, on one side of the scorecard, and we have the Rambam in two different places on the other side of the scorecard. The Mechilta and the Chinuch on one side maintain that there's a double mitzvah, not only Milchama, but also Mechias Zecher Amalek. The Rambam in two places indicates there's no separate mitzvah. Mechias Amalek is only a mitzvah of Milchemes Amalek. And now we have three nafkaminas. Nafkamina number one is if you see an Amaleki, should you kill him? Are you obligated to kill him? According to the Chinuch and before him, the Mechilta of Rabbi Elazar Modoi, yes, because the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. No, but right, according to the Rambam, there's no such mitzvah because if it's a Yochid, I'm not obligated in the mitzvah Molchama. Next nafkamina is going to be Min V'Neched, and the third nafkamina is going to be Behemos of Amalek. Very, very impressive.
So what does the Rambam do with Timcha Zecher Amalek?
Timcha, I think, according to the Rambam, just guessing, it's more of a philosophical statement about the divine promise. Hashem says there's going to be a world that's free of Amalek, free of this evil called Amalek. And God is promising that there's going to be an ongoing battle until finally, at the end of the days, Amalek will be completely destroyed off the earth. But as far as what we're obligated in, the Rambam says that the formulation of that mitzvah is strictly milchama. And Hashem promises that we'll have a world without the evil of Amalek.
Even though Timcha is in the Russian singular.
Correct. In other words, our mitzvah milchama is our contribution to Timcha Zecher Amalek. And Rabosa, I think that when you begin to imagine that, you know, the Nazis in Machshavah were Amalekim, again, if you accept that Shita, then we only wished, again, now it's a little too late to pray for this, but if we could have had this Timcha Zecher Amalek and a fulfillment of this divine promise before World War II, I wonder how many millions of Jews, I said somebody calculated there'd be 30 million Jews alive today. Did you ever hear such a thing? I heard even larger numbers, but you know, if Hitler wiped out 6 million Jews in the year, let's say 1945, at the end of the war, if you calculate, so then today, we're, how many years later are we? 70 years later? How many years? So 70 years later, I mean, that's mamish like 3-4 doros. I know personally of at least 100 people who are 100 Jews who are alive today because of one survivor. I'm sure you know even more numbers than I do.
To multiply that,
multiply that by 6 million. I mean, could you imagine? And that would have been the fulfillment of Timcha Zecher HaMolech, but unfortunately, we didn't look out. Well, we weren't worthy of it. And this promise of Hashem, of destroying HaMolech, if you assume the Nazis were HaMolech, did not come to pass. And you should know that there's discussions, even in Rav Ovadia Yosef's tshuvas and other tshuvas, about terrorism, whether Arab terrorists are called Amalekim. You know, there was one point in history where Sadat, the king of Egypt, said, you know, we're going to throw the entire Jewish people into the river. And that's basically the L'chuv v'nachidem migoy. That might have made him, you know, what was his name? Not Sadat, the guy before him.
Nasser.
I meant to say. Did I say Sadat? Yeah. That wasn't fair. I meant to say Nasser. Now, Rabbosai, what we want to do is Siman Vav on page Reishit Zion.
That is an interesting parallel. It's like, Lo Yizacher Shem Yisrael Od.
Right.
The Yizacher and Zecher.
Yeah. It's the same root, for sure. Lo Yizacher. Okay. Today, we want to study a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota says the following. There are a number of fundamental differences between two kinds of milchama. Now, the word milchama really is a little bit ambiguous because it hides a distinction of two subcategories that should not be equated in Allah. One is called the milchamas mitzvah, and the other is called what? Milchamas rishus. Yeah? Okay. Now, one of the fundamental differences, which Amir Tzshem will talk about, but that's not our main topic, is what's called Netilas Rishus. Let's say the king decides he wants to fight a battle. Does he need to take Rishus from Sanhedrin, the High Court of Israel? So the answer is, if it's Melchemes Mitzvah, he doesn't need Netilas Rishus. He can conscript his army, send them out to the battle, and we'll fight a Melchemes Mitzvah. If it's a Melchemes Rishus, then he needs what's called Netilas Rishus. He's got to get the okay from Sanhedrin. Whether you also need Urim V'Tumim, whether you need a Navi, I mean, whether you need the many, many issues here. But that's one distinction. That's not really the main subject of our discussion today. We want to talk about something a little bit less dramatic, but also important in Allah. And that is, and again, I'm suggesting now one interpretation of the sugya in Sota. We'll have another interpretation. That there's a fundamental nafkemina between milchemes mitzvah, milchemes rishus, vis-a-vis noshim. Are women obligated in the mitzvah of milchama? And the Gemara, and it's really in the Mishnah itself, in Sota, seems to postulate that it depends whether you're dealing with the milchemes mitzvah, milchemes rishus. Because the Mishnah in Sota says, milchemes mitzvah filu kala yotzeis michuposa. And that clearly indicates that women are obligated in milchemes mitzvah. And if you think about it, there's every logical reason to assume so, because we know that women are exempt from what category of mitzvahs?
Zman
grom. This is not a zman grom. There's no time period which is excluded from Melchemes Mitzvah. Again, I'm not going to tell you that every moment we're obligated to Melchemes Mitzvah, but that doesn't matter. In order to make it zman grom, you need a time period which is excluded from the mitzvah. That doesn't register in the case of Melchemes Mitzvah.
In other words, once a Melchemes Mitzvah has been declared, it's a tmidid.
Well, no, I'm saying a little bit different. I mean, what you said is correct. What I'm saying is that a Melchemes Mitzvah could apply any moment in history. There is never a period of Zman Groma means a mitzvah which at some point in time, even if it's 1 minute in time, doesn't apply. Correct? You know, if you were to tell me that you're not allowed to learn Torah on Kratzma, that would make Torah study into Zman Groma. But obviously that's not true what I told you. You know that Hasidim don't, they have what's called Nitlnach, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So they say that the Satmar Rebbe used to cut toilet paper for all the Shabbos in the year on Kratzma night. But the point is that Zman Groma means
I can identify one slice of time that you're not chayiv in the mitzvah. You know, if tefillin lav, if Lila loves on tefillin, then there's no mitzvah tefillin at night, or tzitzis at night, or reason or so, then women are exempt. So far, so good. So Melchemes Mitzvah, there's no time period which is excluded from Melchemes Mitzvah. In fact, even Shabbos we go into the 2 minutes. Oh, now here we have a problem. What's our problem? The Sefer HaChinuch writes that the mitzvah of Melchama against Amalek is incumbent upon the men and only on the men and not the women. And the Minchas Chinuch says that l'chora the Mishnah in Sota is a glaring contradiction to the Sefer HaChinuch, because the Mishnah in Sota says afilu kalu yotzis mitzvah posa, as long as the Melchama's mitzvah. Now I think it's fair to assume, again this is going to be the sugya that we want to discuss, but it's fair to assume up front that Melchemes Amalek would be a classical case of a Melchemes Mitzvah. And if that be the case, then women are obligated. How can the Sefer HaChinuch say that this mitzvah of Amalek only applies to men and not to women? This is one of the most famous pieces in the Sefer Minchas Chinuch, the super commentary on the Chinuch. By the way, if somebody could check this out for me, I have a sense, and I don't remember if I saw it with my eyes, that the Minchas Chinuch is buried in Tzfat, in the old cemetery of Tzfat. Can you know, not now, just for my own curiosity, is that something that I invented in my mind? But I remember when I visited the cemetery in Tzfat, you know, a lot of the kvarim you can't even read what's on it, but there was one kever that was the kever of one of the Gedolei Yisrael, and I don't know why. We say in Yiddish, Likmir and Zinin. I don't know, it seems to me that in the back of my mind it was the Minchas Chinuch. But it doesn't make any sense, because the Minchas Chinuch was not in Eretz Yisrael. So how could he be buried in Tzfat? Okay, anyway. Let's go on. Oh. So this is the question of the Minchas Chinuch. Now, the Chinuch himself, when he justifies the fact that women are not obligated in Amalek, he says because Noshim lav benos mulchamanim, that women are never obligated in mulchamanim. Now, if he means mulchamanim reshus, no problem. I can buy into that. But says the Minchas Chinuch, he's referring to Amalek, which is a paradigm case of Melchemes Mitzvah, the Mishnah says in Sota, Filu Kala, Yotzeis Michu Pasa. The Rambam actually codifies the Mishnah in Sota in the 7th parak of Hilchos Melachim. And you'll see that about line 7 or 8 down in this first parak. He says, Melchemes Mitzvah, Kol Yotzeim Afilu Chasen Michedro, Vekala Michu Pasa. Now, there's a very interesting question of the Radbaz. And the Radbaz says that when the Rambam says Melchemes Mitzvah, women go out to battle, what about the principle of Noshim Lav B'nei Melchemes Mitzvah, that women don't go out to war? So he says an unbelievable chiddush, that when the Rambam says that Afilu Kala Michu Pasa, it doesn't mean that she's on the front lines and she's actually a soldier. It means she's part of the war effort. And she's in the back lines, behind the lines, and she's Mesapkos Mayim Umozon Libaleim. So it means that the mitzvah, Melchemes Mitzvah, has two parts to it. It has the soldiers who are actually battling and killing Amalek, and it has the back line. You know, people have to support the soldiers, they can't live on nothing, and the women are also participants in the mitzvah of Melchemes Amalek. Again, they're not full-fledged participants. They're not going to fight the battle because we have a principle that Isha, la bas melchamininu. So the women are not going to be the lochamim, or shall we call them the lochamot. If that be the case, maybe the Sefer HaChinuch would make sense according to this Radbaz, because Sefer HaChinuch says that women are not included in Melchemes Amalek. And then he goes on to say that women are not included in the mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek. That could mean because they're not soldiers on the front line. Either Mishnah says, Afilu Kala Michu Pasa, that's referring to the back lines, you know, behind the lines. What do you call it is there such a phrase called behind the lines? I don't know, am I inventing a new phrase?
I call it the supply line.
Supply line. Okay, so we understand what we're talking about. So again, the Radbaz has his own chiddush here, and that's the Radbaz, that women are not obligated in the actual battling as soldiers. They're only providing the provisions, and that's their participation. That's what Kalamichu posa. But if we assume, leaving out the Radbaz, that Kalamichu posa means that they're obligated in the actual milchama against Amalek, then how can the Sefer Achinuch write that this mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek is not applicable to women because they're not obligated in Milchemes Amalek, when women should be obligated in Milchemes Amalek as formulated by the Mishnah? Again, on the side, does anybody know the Radbaz's name? I mean, his name was not Radbaz. Radbaz is just Rashi Tevos. Rabbeinu David Ibn Zimra. Does anybody know where he lived? No, he lived in Egypt. He lived in Cairo. Does anybody know when he lived? Now I'm really pushing it. He was a contemporary of the Beit Yosef 5 centuries ago. The Beit Yosef made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and the Radbaz remained in Egypt. Does anyone know who wrote more tshuvas than any Jew who ever lived? It was probably the Radbaz. I'm not sure that that's true, but it's an unbelievable. He was so creative. I mean, I myself own 6 volumes of the Radbaz's tshuva that were published in Venice. That's one of my rare collection that I'm very proud of, because those farim are quite a few centuries old. Now, what we've done until now is A, we've studied the Gemara in Sota, the Mishnah in Sota. B, we've seen that the Sefer Achinuch is problematic because he seems to assume that women are not included in the obligation of Milchemes Amalek. And that's problematic because Milchemes Amalek, insofar as it's a classic Milchemes mitzvah, women are obligated based on the Mishnah in Sota. We saw that the Rambam himself codifies the Mishnah in Sota. And that with regard to Milchemes Mitzvah, even a Kala leaves her chuppah to be part of the war effort. The Radbaz whittles it down and he says she's part of the war effort, but she's not obligated to go out and actually be a frontline soldier. Now we want to introduce another sugya with another Rambam, and that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin at the very beginning of the Masechta. And here the Rambam also gives us, based on that mission, another difference between a Milchemes Mitzvah and a Milchemes Rishus. Our first difference was that women are obligated to Milchemes Mitzvah but not to Milchemes Rishus. Our second difference is Netilas Rishus. And the Rambam says, and this is on the bottom of your right column, Ein HaMelech Milcham Milchemes Tchila. Tchila means without the okay and the consent of the 71 elders of the Bez Nagodol. El B'Milchemes Mitzvah. However, Milchemes Rishus, the Rambam says, Tzorch Lito Rishus Bezne. He can't go on his own initiative, he can't go out to battle of Milchemes Rishus without first receiving the consent of the Bezne, of the Supreme Court of Israel. Could you imagine, Rabosai, in America, for example, the Supreme Court has a lot of power, but it doesn't have any authority, as far as I know, in terms of going out to battle. The Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, can decide to go out to battle. I don't think he needs the approval of the Supreme Court. Am I right? Meaning, the Supreme Court is a legislative body. That has nothing to do with whether, you know, whether or not we go to war against our enemies. But in halacha, it really depends. If you're talking about a Milchemes Mitzvah, then Einochinami, the Supreme Court, has nothing to do with the decision to go out to Milchemes Mitzvah. But if you're talking about a Milchemes Rishus, in which, you know, the implications are obvious. You're putting the Jewish people into tremendous danger, and the Torah didn't even obligate you to go out to the war. For that, you need the Rishus of Bez. Now, why is this so important to us? After all, we're studying Amalek. We're not studying Milchemes Rishus. The answer is because the Rambam, in that context, Perkei Milchus Malachim, defines Milchemes Mitzvah. And he has 3 categories of Milchemes Mitzvah. Number one, he has Shiva Amamin, right? That's the Mitzvah of Hachrim Tachrim. Number 2, he has the mitzvah Mechias HaMolek, and that's very relevant to us. And number three, he has the mitzvah of against the enemies of Israel, of Tsar, you know, if the Oyev is Tsar al Yisrael.
That's
Tsar al Yisrael. So one thing is clear. The Rambam definitely classifies Melchemes Amolek as a Melchemes Mitzvah. It's one of the three categories that he, examples of Melchemes Mitzvah. Now Rashi, back in Masechta Sota, when it talks about a Melchemes Mitzvah, Rashi says, Kol Melchama Kari Rishus. Every battle is considered Rishus. Levad, with the exception of Melchemes Yoshua, Lichbosh es Eretz Yisrael, which is a reference to the Zion armament. Rashi seems to reduce the category of Melchemes Mitzvah to one particular category, one particular case of the three that the Rambam gave, and that is Zion armament. The Rashi says that all others, by default, are Melchemes Rishus, which would seem to include what?
Amalek.
That according to Rashi, Amalek is only a Rishus. Now, in my mind, I don't begin to understand that, because the Torah commands us to go to battle against Amalek. How could that be considered Melchemes Rishus? Maybe what Rashi means is Bizman Hazeh, until the Mashiach comes, it's Melchemes Rishus. Maybe Rashi means that the Torah never explicitly commands us in the mitzvah Melchama. It just says, Timcha Zeicher Amalek. Maybe that's more of a philosophical idea, that we have to battle against the concepts of evil of Amalek, but not that we're obligated to destroy Amalek and go out to battle against Amalek. I don't know. I can't really justify this Rashi, but Rashi seems to maintain that Melchemes Amalek is called the Melchemes Rishus. Now, if that be the case, then when the Mishnah says in Sota, that afilu kala yotzeis mechupasa, that for the sake of Melchemes Mitzvah, even a kala goes out to battle, is that Mishnah that addresses Melchemes Mitzvah, according to Rashi, talking about Amalek? Anybody home? Hello? This is not making me... I'm not feeling very good. Rashi, let me just present the propositions. Rashi seems to reduce Melchemes Mitzvah to the case of Zion Amun, implying that Melchemes Amalek is not a Melchemes Mitzvah. Now the Mishnah says in Sota, with regard to Melchemes Mitzvah, Kala Yotzeis Mechupasa. What is Rashi going to say now? When is the obligation incumbent upon women? Only Zayin Amamin. You with me? Because the Rashi holds that Melchemes Amalek is not a Melchemes Mitzvah. So when the Mishnah says Melchemes Mitzvah and a woman goes out, it's not referring to Amalek. This could be a great salvation for the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch says that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Zechiras HaMolek. They don't have to remember Molek because they're not obligated in the mitzvah of Melchemes HaMolek. But Melchemes HaMolek, we assumed, was a classical Melchemes mitzvah about which the Mishnah says, Afilu Kala Michuposa. But now we're introducing Rashi, and Rashi says that Melchemes mitzvah is Melchemes Yoshua when he enters into the land to destroy the seven armament, implying that Melchemes HaMolek is not a Melchemes mitzvah. And therefore, Kala would not be Yotzeis Mechupasa, and the Sefer HaChinuch therefore is justified. Yeah, Ben.
No, I was just saying that earlier there was a distinction between a Melchama, and if it comes upon you, if an Amaleki comes in front of me, that's not considered Melchama, but it might still be an obligation.
Of Mechias Amalek, we said. Correct. So now the question is, would women be obligated in Mechias Amalek? That's Ben's question, which we're going to get to immediately. But again, as far as Melchemes HaMolek is concerned, whether women are obligated depends upon how you classify Melchemes HaMolek. If we classify it the way you and I would have classified it for the last 80 years, namely that it's a classic Melchemes Mitzvah, then women are obligated. The Sefer HaChinuch says that women are not obligated. How could that be? So for that, we're introducing Rashi, who says the Melchemes Mitzvah is the Kibush of Eretz Yisrael on the part of Yoshua, which would mean that Melchemes HaMolek is only Melchemes Rishus. So the first Afkamina would be then to fight against Amalek, we would need the Rishus of Bezdin. And the second Afkamina would be whether women are obligated in the mitzvah of Amalek. Because I'm talking about Melchemes HaMolek. Because if we assume that Melchemes HaMolek is only a mitzvah of Rishus, then Mehechit Tesi, who says that women are obligated? So the whole issue here about women vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Zechira Samolik, the mitzvah of Achira Samolik, which is an issue that divides the Sefer Achina from the Rama, it all boils down to the following question: is Amolik a Melchemes mitzvah? The Rama says yes. If that be the case, there's no Netilas Rishus. The Melech just gets together the troops and we go out to battle against Amolik. Number two, do the women have to participate? And the answer is yes, they're Amolik. If, on the other hand, we accept Rashi's view that Melchemes Amolik is only a Melchemes Rishus, we're going to have to confer with Bezdin, get their consent before we go out to battle. The king does not have autonomy. And number two, the women are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Melchemes Amolik. Okay, now we're going to turn to page Resh Yud Ches. We identified the Sefer Achinuch with Rashi, namely that Melchemes Amolek is not a Melchemes Mitzvah, but rather a Melchemes Rishus. And that's why the Sefer Achinuch exempts women from the Mitzvah of Zechiras Amolek and the Mitzvah of Achiras Amolek. There's only one problem. The Chinuch himself says, just one second. The Chinuch himself writes in Mitzvah Tov Chaf Hei, which is line 7 on page Resh Yud Ches, that Melchemes Amolek is a Melchemes Mitzvah. So Rabosai, we're disappointed now. Rashi is not going to help us, because we want to answer the Minchas Chinuch's objection against the Chinuch and say the reason why the Chinuch exempts women is because it's only a Melchemes Rishus, when the Chinuch himself is outspoken on the fact that Melchemes Amolek is a Melchemes Mitzvah. So if he says that women are exempt from Melchemes Amolek, it cannot be because Melchemes Amolek, according to the Chinuch, is a Melchemes Rishus. He himself goes on paper, on record, as saying that Melchemes Amolek is a Melchemes Mitzvah. I didn't hear what you said, I'm sorry.
Hakol Yotzim.
Well, Hakol Yotzim is the language of the Mishnah in Sota. And Hakol Yotzim means that the Mishnah in Sota obligates both men and women equally in the mitzvah of Melchemes Mitzvah. Now that the Sefer Achinuch is on board classifying Amolek as a Melchemes Mitzvah, then in the case of Amolek, the Sefer Achinuch should have logically concluded that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Amolek. Then we're back to square one with the Minchas Chinuch's objection. How can the Sefer Achinuch say that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Amolek? So in order to answer this question, in pages Resh Yud Ches and Resh Yud Tes, the Gvuras Yitzchak quotes a Brisker Rav. Now, I don't know if you know this, the Brisker Rav actually published in his lifetime Chidushim on the Torah itself. And he has a major chiddush in Parshas Beshalach to try to explain and answer another kash of the Minchas Chinuch. So we have the first kash of the Minchas Chinuch: how could the Chinuch exempt women from the mitzvah of Amolek? It's a Melchemes mitzvah. Now we have a second kasha on the Chinuch. The Chinuch in Tov Chaf Hei regarding the mitzvah of Zayin Amami says that if you see one of the Knanim, you have to kill him. Because the mitzvah of Zayin Amim is not just the Melchama, but it's also Chovas Yochi. So the Minchas says, I don't get it. If you read the Sefer Achinuch carefully, he adds a phrase that seems to torpedo everything that we know. He says the following: Mitzvah Tof Chof Hei Laharog Zayin Amimin, the overall zeh ubal yado echad mehem the yochel hargo belishi is takim edover lo hargo bitel mitzus asay zu milvad she overall lav she nema lo sechay kol neshama. Now I'm going to test you, my friends. Okay, are you ready for this little quiz question? There are three words in this paragraph of the Sefer Achinuch that absolutely undermine everything that we know. Which are those three words? Time's over. Beli she is stacking the dover. Please highlight those three words. Again, I'm not going to lend you my highlight. You don't deserve it. But Beli she is stacking the dover. which means that you only are obligated to kill Zayin Amun if you're not putting your life into danger. And the Minchaschinuch goes ballistic. The whole nature of Melchama requires that you put your life into danger. If you can tell me, well, don't put your life into danger for the mitzvah of Zayin Amun, then you might as well uproot the whole mitzvah of Melchama. Because no one could go out to battle without putting his life into danger. That's the nature of Melchama. So you've completely undermined the entire mitzvah. Take the mitzvah Melchama and just rip it out of the Torah. Because the Sefer HaChinuch says that you're only chayav because Belishi is takein b'dover. Because he's not putting himself into sakon. No, so let's just forget the mitzvah Melchama. Just let it dissipate.
I'm seeing an overlap. Nechiyah, I mean, to not allow them to live, war can be one of many mechanisms to destroy them. Maybe there's other ways.
Well, right? Could you say it a little differently, man? I mean, you're on the right track, but what does this mitzvah of Zayin Amamin entail? What does it obligate besides Melchama?
Completely uproot, destroy.
In what sense? Give me a simple case that we've been discussing for the last hour. I don't know how long we've... What?
La'abed.
I don't know, you're going to have to let him take your hand away.
No.
Again, what would be a scenario in which I'm obligated in the midst of killing Zayin Amun, which is not Melchama?
When you meet somebody...
Exactly, I meet a Kenani and I have to kill him. That's not Melchama. And if you remember, the Sefer HaChinuch says that the mitzvah of Zayin Amun applies not only vis-a-vis the tzibur, but for every single individual. I mean, the bombastic chiddush of the Chinuch is that he extends that same bifurcation to the mitzvah of Amalek. But let's just talk about the mitzvah of Zayin Amun. So the mitzvah of Zayin Amun, Ben says very well, is not just, it doesn't exhaust itself in Melchama. There's an additional obligation that's generated by the mitzvah of Lo Sakai called Neshama. If this Neshama is a Knani, I've got to kill this Neshama.
Babi Yada.
That's a Chovas Yachid outside the framework of Melchama. Ah. What is the Minchas Chinas argument? The mitzvah of Melchama by definition means I put my life into danger. Now we're going into a whole different field. Now the Sefer HaChinuch is saying Belishi is talking b'do because it's Bali Yado. Bali Yado Echad Mehem is not a case of Melchama. It's a case in which the Chovas Yachid requires me to kill this individual Knani. And here it's a mitzvah like any other mitzvah. It doesn't have this unique character of being Melchama that requires me to put my life into danger. No mitzvah in the Torah requires me to put my life into danger. And certainly not this mitzvah of Zayin Amamin. So I'm not going to put my life into danger to kill this Kenani. Let him live. I don't want to die. And the Brisker Rav says the following. Take a look at the last, shall I say, 10 lines in this paragraph before the end of the page, I mean to say. He says, the Chidushei Maran Gris al-Levi al-Torah Parashat Shalach says that although it's true that Ein Mashgichin b'molchama sakonis nefashos, there is no issue of pikuach nefesh with regard to the mitzvah of molchama, you have to put your life into danger. Zeu midini molchama. When we're going out to molchama. Oh, and now he says the following, that the Chinuch is talking about a case of Misha Boli Yado Echad Mi Zayin Amamin below Milchama. That's considered not a Milchama, but a mitzvah like any other mitzvah. And Pikuach Nefesh is Docha every single mitzvah. Now in the middle here I skipped one point. I'm just trying to think for a second if it's critical for us. You know what, I think it's going to just confuse us, but the Brisker Rav, I'll just say it, but don't pay any attention to it because it's just going to derail you. There's something called the Mechemes Rishus. Now, Mechemes Rishus, also you have to put your life into danger. Why is that so? The answer is that it has what's called a Din Melchama. So there's a concept here in the Brisker Rav's frame of reference called Din Melchama. And once you have a Din Melchama, you have to put your life into danger. So Melchemes Rishus is contingent on many conditions, but if those conditions are met, then the Dini Melchama are activated and therefore you have to put your life into danger. But anyway, leaving out Melchama for a minute, let's say we talk about a Klal Mitzvah HaTorah, all the other Mitzvahs HaTorah are overridden by Pikuach Nefesh. The Chinuch, when he says that you should only kill one of the Zayin Amamim if Belil Estakein B'Dabar, if you're not putting your life in danger. He's not talking about the mitzvah Chama. He's talking about a separate mitzvah of killing every single individual member of the Zayin Amamim. And that mitzvah is incumbent on you as an individual, if only you're not putting your life into danger. Now, in order to embellish this, the Brisker Rav quotes a parsha of what's called Shiras Devora. And if you remember, there was a great battle. Who were they battling against? Remind me, was it the Assyrians? I don't remember right now. Anyway, they won the battle, and she, Devora, yeah, right? And she sang a song of praise. Now, in that song of praise, she heaps a great deal of praise on two Shvatim that were fighting this battle. One was Zvulun and the other was Naphtali. However, the language of Hashira is very telling, because when it comes to Zvulun, she says about Zvulun is Imcheref Nafshalamus. Cheref Nafshalamus means that Zvulun was willing to put his life on the line and die for the sake of this Melchama. Naphtali al Merome Soda. Naphtali should be uplifted on the fields, but she doesn't say a word about the fact that Naphtali put his life into danger. So the Brisker Rav explains, what's the difference between Naphtali and Zvulun? And the answer is that when Dvorah instructed Barak to go out and battle, he instructed him to take 10,000 ish, right? Aser Salafim ish, mi bnei Naphtali u mi bnei Zvulun. So this was a battle that would be won by two out of the 12 Shvatim. None of the other Shvatim were conscripted. Right? None of them were conscripted. Okay. However, he says the following, that there was a split here in this battle, in this military campaign, between Zvulun and Naphtali. And that is the following. Between Zvulun and Naphtali on the one hand, and the other Shvatim on the other hand. What does it mean? He says the following, that Zvulun and Naphtali were conscripted, and the other Shvatim were considered lavo li'ezras Yisrael, meaning they had an obligation not to fight the battle, but rather support the war effort, as we said before. And that's what she meant when she emphasized with regard to these Shvatim. I mistakenly made a distinction between Zvulun and Naphtali. Let's leave that out. Let's omit that from the record. Okay, Jeff, you'll help me do that later on. I'm just kidding. But what I meant to say was that both Zvulun and Naphtali would go out to battle. They were actually the soldiers on the field, and that's what she praises them of Charaf Nafsho. However, the other Shvatim, who were in a different capacity, they had to come Li Ezra, and they were being Mekayim in the midst of Hachrem Tachrem vis-a-vis the seven nations. And she would never describe the other ten Shvatim as Cheref Nafsham Lamus, because they were only obligated in the mitzvah, not of Milchama, but in the mitzvah of Hachrem Tachrem. Says the Brisker Rav, the mitzvah of Hachrem Tachrem does not require a person to put his life into danger, so they didn't actually stick their necks out. Only the members of Zvulun and Naphtali were the ones who put their neck out, and they endangered their lives because they were actually obligated in the midst of Muhammad and conscripted as soldiers. Now the Rambam in Perek Hei Mehilchus Melachim has two halachos, if you recall. The first of which, Halacha Dalet, addresses the mitzvah of Hachrim Tachrim Zayin Amin. The second Halacha Hei, addresses the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. And only in the case of Zayin Amim, does he say in Bol Yodo Echad Mehem, you have to kill him? In the case of Hamolek, he completely omits that line. It sounds like the Rambam sheet that we discussed this at great length in the previous Simon is that the mitzvah of Hamolek is exclusively a mitzvah of Milchama, and therefore it's only incumbent upon the Tzibur. There's no Chiyuv of Hamolek according to the Rambam Al Kol Yachid V'Yachid. And therefore, if a particular Amalekian individual comes to Yodcha, Bol Yodcha, you don't have to kill him. And the Rambam says this explicitly in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, in Mitzvah Reish Mem Ches. So the Rambam holds the Mitzvah Melchama, the Mitzvah Amalek is a Chovas Tzibur, and there's no Chovas Yochid. And it means that the Mitzvah Mechias Amalek is not incumbent upon the individual, but on the tzibur, as the Torah says, Milchama Lashem Be'amolik. Now we're on page Reish Yutes. However, the mitzvah of Zayin Amamin, in addition to being a Chovas Milchama, says the Rambam, is also a mitzvah b'fnei atzma, to kill every single individual who comes liyodcha. Now women are lav b'nei milchama ninu. And here's the question. Would a woman be obligated to kill one of the members of the Zayin Amamin outside the framework of Milchama? Well, if this is not a Milchama, then we don't apply the principle of Noshim Lav Binos Milchama Ninu. And at the same time, we're not talking about a Mitzvah Man Groma, so women are obligated. Well, if this be the case, then we can now offer a whole new answer to the Kasha of the Sefer HaChinuch that we started with. How do you reconcile the Sefer HaChinuch, asks the Minchas Chinuch, with the Mishnah in Sota that says, Afilu Kali Yotzeis Mechu Pasa? And the answer is that women are obligated in Milchama, even if we assume that Amalek is a Milchamis Mitzvah, right? Not like Rashi, but like the Sefer HaChinuch in fact maintains. But nevertheless, there's no Chovas Yachid in the case of Amalek. So when it says in the Mishnah in Sota, Afilu Kali Yotzeis Mechu Pasa, that's addressing the case of Zayin Amamin where there's a Chovas Yachid. But in the case of Amalek, where there is no Chovas Yachid, as we saw in the Rambam, therefore women are not obligated because you're left with the Mitzvah Melchama. So let me just get excited about this and see if I can get you excited about this. The Minchas Chinuch objects to the Sefer HaChinuch. How can he exempt women from Amalek when the Mishnah says the Milchamis Mitzvah women go out even the Kalami Chupasa? The answer is that even if I grant the Minchas Chinuch's assumption, which is quite clear from the Sefer HaChinuch, that the Milchama of Amalek is a Mitzvah, but it doesn't have that additional element. That additional chiyuv of in Bol Yodcha, because the Rambam in Amalek leaves out that whole line in Bol Yodcha. The Rambam holds Milchama Lashem LaMolek. Where does the Mishnah Sota include women in the mitzvah of Milchama? That's only with regard to the mitzvah that's called Yachid V'Yachid. As far as the Tzibur is concerned, which is a mitzvah of Milchama, women are not included because La B'nei Milchama's mitzvah. When it says in the Mishnah Sota, Kafilu Kalab B'Chupasa, that's talking about a case where she can go out and contribute to the war effort. She can, instead of being part of the war, she has the ability to kill one of the Zayin Amamin, and therefore she's obligated in that mitzvah, even if it means that she leaves her chuppah. Women are obligated. That's not a mitzvah melchama, and we don't apply the principle of lab benos melchama. However, in the case of Amalek, where we saw in the Rambam that the Rambam omits the second element, the second dimension of Mitzvah Amalek, namely the Chovas Yachid, all he has a Mitzvah Melcham, the women are part of, because they were never included in the Mitzvah Melcham. So basically we have two approaches to answer the Minchas Chinuch's question, the first of which we're going to reject, and the first of which is that Amalek is not a Milchamis Mitzvah, and therefore women are not obligated, it has nothing to do with the Mishnah Sota. And that's based on Rashi, who seems to assume that any Milchamis Rishus, except for Yoshua going in and conquering the land. We rejected that because the Sefer HaChinuch goes on record as saying that Milchamis Amalek is a Milchamis Mitzvah. But what is the nature of that Milchamis Mitzvah and what is its scope? And herein lies the difference between Zayin Amamin And Milchama Samolik Zayin Am, in addition to Milchama in that framework, also has a mitzvah on the Yachid, and that's where women are going to be obligated, and that's what the Mishnah has in mind, Afilu Kala Michu Posa. As far as Amolik is concerned, the Sefer Chinuch is right. That mitzvah exhausts itself in Milchama. Women are not benos Milchama, they're not included in that mitzvah, and therefore women are exempt from Zechira Samolik and from Mechia Samolik. Okay, there are both sides. We'll stop. We'll stop here. Yeah. Wish everyone a meaningful thing.
Should we speak right after Mincha?
Did they stop Mincha?